We were up to Perek Chav Beis. Okay, before we do this, I want to give a long preface, which may take most of this year, because I have a very, I think, strong question on the second paragraph here, but it's dependent on what I'm going to tell you. And I see that Rav Aaron Cutler, I think, had the same question. He gives an answer, but I don't like the answer. So I see what the question and what the answer is and what I think the answer should be. Let's get to the thing first. We'll start with something completely nothing to do with this Mesillas Yesharim, but it has a lot to do with it in the end. The Gemara says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan, so he told him to make first the Mishkan, meaning the infrastructure, and then the Kalim, the various vessels of the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu told Bezalel the opposite order. He changed it around. And he told him first to make the vessels, and then the Mishkan. So Bezalel said, Lo kach min hago shalolam, that's not the way the world is. People don't make the furniture and then build the house around it. If I make the furniture first, without the house, where am I going to put the furniture? Must be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you the opposite. First to make the Mishkan, and then to make the furniture. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know you're right. That's what the Rabban Shalom told me, and you were Bitzel Kael, you were in the shadow of God, and you knew. You knew what the Rabban Shalom really told me. And that's why his name was Bezalel. Bitzel Kael, in the shadow of God. So two questions. First of all, how in the world did Moshe Rabbeinu change it around? If he made a mistake, God told him one thing, and he made a mistake and thought the other way, that puts the whole Torah in doubt, in question. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu made other mistakes. Maybe it's not milk and meat we're not supposed to eat. Maybe it's orange juice and meat or whatever. And Moshe Rabbeinu's got it wrong. So that's untenable. If Moshe Rabbeinu did it on purpose, right, to test Yoshua or whatever, where did he get a right to fool around with the Torah? Huh? I mean, it's no Moshe Rabbeinu changing around.
No.
Yes. Oh, Bezalel, yeah. How do you have the right to fool Bezalel? How do you have the right to fool around with the Torah? So, either possibility doesn't seem to be possible. So, what's the idea? How did Moshe Rabbeinu switch it around? Secondly, the shade is usually euphemism for doubt, shadow of a doubt. In the Hebrew also we say tzilo shel safek, and light is a euphemism for clarity. If Moshe wanted to say you knew what God said, he should have said Be'or Kael, you were in the light of God and you knew, not Bezalel Kael, not in the shadow of God. So why was he called Bezalel? He should have been called Or Kael. To answer it, usually say the following, and this is what we'll have tremendous connection to what the Mesillas Yesharim is going to say and lead to a very strong question, I think. And that's the following. The Aron, the Torah says, was gold on the inside, gold on the outside. And we learn from that a Talmud Chacham should be Tocho Kibaro. His inside should be like his outside. Now that implies that the first thing is the outside. Because you can't have an inside like the outside if there's not an outside that begins. So you're making the inside to fit the outside. L'cha'ora, that's not the way it should be. A person should first work on his inside, because that's liba boy. The Rabban Shalom wants your kavana. He wants really the inside. And then the outside can be just like the inside. But that a person should work on the outside first, and then on the inside, doesn't seem right. But the answer is that that is exactly the way people have to function. I had a woman in my kehillah in Miami who was brought up in a what they call modern Orthodox. I hate that designation because it sounds like the people who are from are, you know, old-fashioned from the Stone Age. So there's nothing modern about it. It's just that that maybe the way they say it here in Eretz Yisrael is dati light, right? So that's the level of observance was very shallow. Okay, in other words, the kashrus, they kept kosher, but anything that had a K, even in the name of the product, was kosher. So that was kashrus. Or Shabbos, they didn't answer the phone, they didn't drive, but lametes melachos they knew nothing about, and that was their Shabbos. And so on. And she married somebody who basically was the same level. And their first year of marriage was, there were this kind of observance. And then she had a baby, and she got much more serious. And she decided that if she would bring up a child, she got to bring him up in a more serious, meaningful way of Yiddishkeit. So she started to learn and to upgrade her Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and with guidance. And it wasn't overnight. She didn't go and change overnight. It's a slow process, the way it should have been. And she came to Shiurim, and first she upgraded the kashrus of her house, then she upgraded the Shabbos. This took about a year or two until they finally reached a very nice level of Shmiras HaMitzvahs. At that time in Miami, very few people dressed halachically proper, women. Okay, most married women did not cover their hair, and not much of that's for their bodies either. It was Miami. The only ones who really dressed halachically proper were rabbis' wives, or teachers in the school, or their wives, or whatever. Klei Kodesh. And the Hamonam, for the most part, with very few exceptions, did not dress halachically proper. So one time I told her, I think you're ready for the next level of observance. I think you're going to have to, if you want to be serious, start dressing halachically too. Start covering your hair, and the other parts of your body that have to be covered, to dress properly. She said to me, Rabbi, I don't feel inside like a Rebbetzin. And I don't want to put on a show as if I am a Rebbetzin and dress like one. As soon as I feel inside like a Rebbetzin, I'll dress the part. So I told her, you know what you can be compared to? Somebody who comes to shul on Simchas Torah, and he says, I don't really feel happy with the Torah. So if I get up and dance, I'm a hypocrite. So I'm going to sit and contemplate being happy, and as soon as I'm happy, I'm going to get up and dance. The guy will sit there till Tisha B'Av. Right? How do you get happy? You dance. That's not a hypocrite. A hypocrite is a person who wants to put on a show and doesn't really believe in it and doesn't want to come to that. But if that's what you want, that's how the world is. Motions create emotions. You go through the motions, and that's how all the mitzvahs, the Sefer HaChinuch says, that's the purpose of all physical mitzvahs, hachitzonius ma'orer esapnimius. The externals awaken the internals. How do you get the right ideas, the right philosophies, the right emotions? By going through the motions. So I told her, if you're going to continue dressing in an immodest way, you're never going to feel modest. But if you dress modestly, eventually it will affect you and you'll feel modest. So you're not a hypocrite if you don't feel it now and you're dressing the part. You're not doing it to fool people. You're doing it because that's what you want. You want to get there. That's 100% okay. And that's the way the world is. The Sefer HaIkarim says, what a person senses with his feelings is much more real to him, and that's what arouses him to do things. What you see, feel, hear, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai. The Rabban Shalom described to him exactly what was going on beneath with the Chet HaEgel, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't break the luchos. When did he break the luchos? When he actually saw it with his own eyes. Not because he didn't believe the Rabban Shalom, believe them 100%. But what moves you to do something is what you see, what you're involved in physically. Motions create emotions. That's the way, that's 100% the way the world. The Mishnah Berurah says, a person should bench out loud, because that generates kavana. When you hear yourself benching, that's how you create kavana. So going through the motions creates emotions. That's for sure the way of the world. There's only one problem. So therefore, the Torah says, first the chitzonius, first put the gold on the outside, and then on the inside, in order that the inside should eventually be like the outside, because it's the outside that will generate those inner feelings. There's only one problem with that. The Torah doesn't say that. That's how the rabbis describe the Aron, Tocho Kibaro. But the Torah says the opposite. The Torah says, V'tzipiso so zahov tahar, you should cover the Aron with gold. How? Mibayis u'michutz. Inside and outside. So the Torah says the inside first. So why did the rabbis change the order and say Tocho Kibaro? They should have said Baro Ketocho. Because the Torah says first the inside, then the outside. So I think the answer to that is that there's three stages in inside outside, and that is the following: when the Torah said "Vitzipisa oso zahav tahar," you should cover it with gold. It's not just a general statement that the Torah then qualified. How should you cover it with gold, inside and outside? No. If the Torah had just said that pasuk, "Vitzipisa oso zahav tahar," I would say you cover it on the outside, like all the other kelim that were covered with gold. We're covered on the outside. So when the Torah said Vitzipiso so zahav tahar, it meant on the outside. Cover it on the outside. Then the Torah said Mibayis, and also on the inside. And then the Torah said again Bachutz, on the outside. So three stages. And what were they? The Rashi says that Bezalel took three boxes. The main box of the Aron itself was wood. It was a medium-sized box. There was a larger box of gold and a smaller box of gold. The first thing Bezalel did was cover the Aron, the middle box of wood, with gold by putting the middle box into the bigger outer box. So now the Aron was covered on the outside with gold. So that's the outside comes first. Then he put the little box of gold inside the wooden box. Now the Aron was covered on the inside with gold. So outside, inside. Now, even though the arm was covered on the outside and the inside, the rim wasn't covered. If you looked down on the arm, there was a sandwich. You could see gold, wood, gold. So that wood had to be covered too. So now they covered the outside of the rim with gold. So that was the three stages. First, the outside, and then the inside, just like the rabbis say, Tocho Kibaro, that the outside comes first and then the inside, and then the outside again. So you have to understand what that means. We understand now that the outside comes first because that's what generates emotions. That's what generates feelings, ideas, or whatever. But where's the place now for the outside again? So let's go back to the guy on Simchas Torah. Okay? He's dancing in order to get happy. Now he gets happy. Should he stop dancing? Okay, now I really feel happy on the inside. So now I don't need to dance anymore. The dancing was there to bring me to a feeling of happiness. So now I'm happy. So I can go sit down. No. He should still continue dancing. Why? Because the dancing has two purposes. One, to generate happiness, and the other, to express it. There's a Ramban that the Sfasemis brings down. I was never able to find this Ramban. He says it's in the Ramban on Aseres HaDibros, which does not mean the Ramban in his commentary to the Torah on the Aseres HaDibros, but the Ramban wrote a separate work, a separate chibur on the Aseres HaDibros. And it's supposed to be in there. I didn't find it there. But in any case, the Sfasemis says it's there, even though what he says sounds like a Hasidisha vort and not a Ramban. What he says is like this. The Ramban says that on the pasuk, Mato'iru u'mato'oru es ha'ahava ad shetechpot. Don't arouse love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu ad shetechpot, until you put it into a chefetz, until you put it into something concrete. If you have tremendous emotions of love, fear, any of emotional things that are very ethereal, spiritual feelings, don't leave them in that state, but put them, express them in something concrete, in a chefetz. Express them in a physical way, because that is much stronger than leaving them just floating in the air in a spiritual sense. In that respect, Rav Moshe Cordovero says that the Mekubal, he says that the neshamos in Gan Eden look forward to Tchias HaNesim, when they'll be able to go back into a body like we look forward to Mashiach. because the level of being totally spiritual is not as great as the level where the spiritual and the physical are together. Which answers a question on a different Ramban. There's an argument between the Ramban and the Rambam on what exactly Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim are. The Rambam learns that Olam Haba is not a new world. It's called Olam Haba because it's a world that comes after you die. But it exists now. It's called Gan Eden. It's called Olam HaNefashos, the world of souls. All of us were there before we came into this world, and we're going back there when we leave this world. So that world exists simultaneous to this world. The only reason it's called Olam Haba is the world that comes after you die, or before you're born, or whatever. But it's not a new world. It's a world that exists. And that's the world of Nefashos, and that's what's called Olam Haba, and that is the final stage of history where people will be neshamos and exist in a spiritual world forever. That's the end of process of the world, Olam Haba. I watch Tchias HaMesim, says the Rambam, something limited. There'll come a time when the neshamos in Gan Eden will come back into this world for a limited amount of time into a body and exist again as people with bodies, and then the neshama will leave and go back to Olam Haba eternally. What the purpose of that Tchias HaMesim is not for now. There's a purpose for that, why it has to come like that. Okay, that's the Rambam. The Ramban, so according to the Rambam, Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim are not the same thing. Tchias HaMesim is one stage in the process, the existence of the world, which will be for a limited time, and Olam Haba is a totally spiritual world. And that seems to fit what Chazal say, because they say that Olam Haba is Ein lo bo achila velo shtiya, there's no eating, there's no drinking, it's seemingly a spiritual world. The Ramban argues, and the Ramban says that Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim are the same thing. And Olam Haba is a new world that doesn't exist now, but a world that God will refashion to fit eternal beings who are both physical and spiritual. In other words, the soul will come back into the body, that's Tchias HaMesim, and the Ribbono Shel Olam will then refashion the world to accommodate neshamos and bodies that are eternal. It says Ein bo achila v'ein bo shtiya. This is true. Moshe Rabbeinu had a body. He didn't eat and drink for 40 days. So that body will not need to eat and drink. It'll be a body, but there won't be any purpose for the body to have to eat and drink. It'll be nurtured by the neshama. That's the Ramban. So everybody asks on the Ramban, if you have a body that doesn't need to eat and drink, and it's nurtured by the neshama, what do you need a body for? We understand a body is a physical plant to enable the neshama to live in this world. So the body nurtures the neshama. But if in the next world, the body's not going to have to nurture the neshama. Just the opposite. The neshama will nurture the body, so what do you need a body for? According to what we said, very simple. Because the body serves two purposes. The body nurtures the neshama and arouses it to various ideas by going through the motions. But once you have those emotions and the neshama has those spiritual emotions, it's much more real for it to express it through a body in a physical way than to leave it ethereal, just what's it called, spiritual. So in this world, the body serves two purposes. It nurtures the neshama, and it expresses the neshama, gives the neshama a place to express itself physically. In the next world, the body will not need to nurture the neshama will nurture the body. But the body will give the neshama the opportunity to express itself in a physical way. And that's a higher level than the neshama just expressing itself spiritually. That is this idea. So there's three levels. There's body, neshama, body. Physical, spiritual, physical, first arouse the feelings, the spiritual feelings, by going through the motions, and then once you have those feelings, express them in a physical way to concretize them. That's the basic idea. Okay, now going back to that original Gemara, this answers also another thing that should bother people. Most mitzvahs that we do, especially really important mitzvahs, are accompanied by eating. You make a suda. Right? You make a siyum, eat. You, what's it called, Shabbos, eat. Yontif, eat. You want to, what's it called, have a bris, eat. Pidyon HaBen, eat. We're always eating. Right? Why are mitzvahs accompanied by eating? It would seem that we should, do something more spiritual to accompany a mitzvah than sit down and have, a deli sandwich or some lox and bagels or whatever. What does that have to do with the mitzvah? Now, the idea is that it says by in last week's Sedra, Vayechazu eso Elokim, Vayochlu Vayishtu. They saw the Rabbanu Shel Olam kibiyachol, as they had a tremendously high prophetic vision, and then they went and ate. Why? The same idea. They put it into a physical, right? Once you have these tremendous feelings, express it in a physical way. The most physical way is by eating. So a Sudas Mitzvah accompanies the things that you want to have, these tremendously high spiritual ideas, but express them in a physical way. It makes it more real, more concrete. So that is the basic idea. Now we can apply it to that Gemara. The Mishkan, the Ramban says, even though there are many sources that say that the Mishkan was a kapara for the Chet HaEgel, right? They made a golden calf, not commanded. They decided they're going to make some kind of way of focusing on something that will connect them to God. That was what the golden calf was, according to many Rishonim. And that was wrong, because you don't create what you think is a good intermediary. So God gave us an intermediary between Him and that's called the Mishkan. There's no difference between a golden calf and a golden building, if you want to use that as a means of connecting to God. The only difference is the golden calf wasn't commanded and the golden building was. The Rav Shlom said, this is the way to connect to me, but you, what's it called? That's a way to connect to the Rabban Shalom. So it was a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. You chose to connect yourself to me in a way that you created. Now you subjugate yourself to the way that I'm going to tell you, the Mishkan. Okay. So the Mishkan was a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. But Lemaisa, the tzivui for the Mishkan came before the Chet HaEgel. Parshas Truma and Tetzava, which speak about the Mishkan and the Big Day Kahuna, precede Kisisa, where the Chet HaEgel is. So Rashi says, taka out of order. All of this happened after the Chet HaEgel. But the Ramban says no. The Rabbanu Shlom originally gave the command to Moshe Rabbeinu of the Mishkan before the Chet HaEgel. Before the Chet HaEgel. And the Mishkan would have served a function even had they not sinned with the golden calf. Except after the sin of the golden calf, the Mishkan took on another dimension as a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. But the Mishkan would have existed before the Chet HaEgel too. However, I think that there would have been a tremendous difference between what the function of the Mishkan would have been before the Chet HaEgel and the function after the Chet HaEgel, meaning the following. Before the Chet HaEgel, you didn't need the Mishkan to generate a feeling of closeness to God, because the Torah says not like that. The Torah says in the end of Yisro, "B'chol ha-makom asher azkir eshemi, avoy lecha v'rachticha." Any place in the world where you mention my name, where I give you permission to mention my name, right? You can feel my presence, and I'll come there and bless you. So you didn't need a mishkan to feel God's presence, because you can feel that anywhere. So what do you need a mishkan for? Once you had that tremendous feeling of God's presence anywhere in the world, you would come to the Mishkan and make use of the kelim there, the Karbanos, the Mizbeach, or the Kohanim as representatives. It wouldn't be even the Kohanim. All the Bechoros would have come and used the kelim, the menorah and the shulchan and so on, to express that feeling. So the purpose of the Mishkan would not have been to generate the feeling, but rather to express the feeling that you generate anywhere in the world. After the Chet HaEgel, we needed a place, just like we show that we needed an ego to focus on, to feel God's presence. So the Rabbanu Shem said, your madrega has gone down, and now you can't feel my presence everywhere. You're going to have to come to the Mishkan, and by being in that environment, you'll feel my presence. Once you feel my presence, now express that feeling through the kelim of the Mishkan. Comes out that before the Chet HaEgel, right, the main purpose of the Mishkan was the kelim, was the vessels. But the infrastructure of the Mishkan was not necessary before the kelim. Once you express that feeling of closeness to God through the kelim, you created even a greater feeling of closeness to God, which is the Mishkan. So before the Chet HaEgel, the order would have been kelim and then Mishkan. After the Chet HaEgel, you needed the Mishkan to generate those feelings, so the order was Mishkan and then kelim. When the Rabban Shem told Moshe Rabbeinu the tzivui of the Mishkan, he knew there was going to be a Chet HaEgel. And God's knowledge does not affect free choice. So God could know there was going to be a Chet HaEgel, and still there didn't have to be a Chet HaEgel. Okay? However that is, that's something beyond our understanding. But that's a fact. Okay? God's knowledge does not affect free choice. However, the Meshech Chochma says that human knowledge does affect free choice. If a human being would know something, right, from God, then that would affect the free choice of people after that. He says it, in the Gemara Menachos, that Moshe Rabbeinu was shown Rabbi Akiva giving a shir, and he didn't understand a word he was saying, and he was very upset until he heard Rabbi Akiva said, this is halacha l'Moshe miSinai. So he realized this is a continuation of his Torah, but he didn't understand what Rabbi Akiva was saying. Says the Meshech Chochma, why did Moshe Rabbeinu understand what Rabbi Akiva was saying? So because Rabbi Akiva was teaching the halachas they would need in Golas. Rabbi Akiva was in the, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and he was giving over halachas they would need to be able to survive in Golas, like not drinking Goyish wine, all the takanas that the Rabbana made after Churban HaBayis to keep us away from the Goy. Had Moshe Rabbeinu understood that shir, he would have known there was going to be a Golas and a Churban. And if Moshe knew there was going to be a Golas and a Churban, it would have affected the free choice of the people before that. So Moshe couldn't know what Rabbi Akiva was saying. From that Meshech Chochma, you see that what people know does affect free choice. So Moshe could not have known that there's going to be a sin of the golden calf. So therefore, the Rabban Shem said like this, I really know that eventually they're going to need the Mishkan and then the Kelim. But if I tell that to Moshe Rabbeinu clearly, he's going to say, why? Right now we're on a level that the Kelim come before the Mishkan. We don't need a Mishkan to generate a feeling of closeness to God. We could feel that anywhere in the world. Why in the world would God tell us to make the Mishkan first and then the Kelim? Must be that the Jewish people are going to be on a level from Madrega. There's going to be a sin, and that would have affected their free choice. So therefore, the Rabban Shem told Moshe Rabbeinu the emes, the Mishkan first and then the Kelim, but he obscured it, and he clouded it, and he made Moshe Rabbeinu think that what he was telling him was first the Kelim, then the Mishkan. And that fit the situation as it was then. When Moshe told it over to Bezalel, it was after the sin of the golden calf, when he came down from the mountain the last time. And they already known that they sinned with the golden calf. And then Moshe Rabbeinu told them, God told me Kelim and then Mishkan, which God had intentionally made Moshe Rabbeinu think that's what he told him, but it's not really what he told him. Bezalel said, that can't be, because that's not minhago shel olam, that's not the way the world is now. The way the world is now, we need the Mishkan before the Kelim. First we have to feel God's presence before we can serve it and use the Kelim to express it. Must be that when God spoke to you, he really told you Mishkan first and then Kelim, but he obscured it and put you in the dark in order that you should not understand it and not affect the free choice of the Chet HaEgel. And that's what Moshe said. You're right. Now looking back, I see that the Rabban Shom didn't want me to understand what he really meant, because he didn't want me to know there was going to be a Chet. But Taka, you were Betzel Kel. You understood that shadow that God put me in to make me believe that he meant Kalim first and then Mishkan, when in fact what he said was Mishkan and then Kalim, but made it obscure so I wouldn't understand. And that's why he's called Bezalel. Okay, bottom line from all of that is that the way of the world is that first you go through the motions, and that's how you get emotions. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that is all mitzvahs and Torahs like that. You go through the motions. You drink four cups of wine, right, and that's supposed to bring you to the idea of Cheirus, and you, what's it called, you put on tefillin, that's supposed to connect you to the Ribbono Shel Olam. All these things are going through the motions. Eventually you'll get to the emotions, but that's how it has to work. Okay, in light of all that,
so the Serum says that, not Jesus,
right, the Mishnah Serum says that by himself. Okay, now listen to this. Right, in earlier the Mesil Shisharim spoke about how abhorrent haughtiness is. Umichlola nishma shevach anova. You want to know how great humility is, do the converse of how bad gaiva is. Achata, so now what am I going to have to describe for you now, the mid of anova? Achata nevor yosef b'derech ikur anova. What anova is in its essence. It is boyer ha-gaiva me'ela, and then you'll understand what the gaiva is in its essence. Till now I told you how bad it is, so you can know how good anova is, but what exactly it is I haven't yet discussed. Now I'll discuss for you what real humility is, and me'ela you understand what real gaiva is. Okay, now, hine klal ha-anova, right, the general idea of humility is, heyosa adam bilti machshiv atzmo mishum tam shiyeh. Real anova is that a person does not consider himself important. And like we said last week, that doesn't mean you think you're a nobody. It means that your importance you don't attribute to yourself, but you attribute it to the potential that God gave you. And that is the antithesis of gaiva, where a person attributes importance to himself. I'm really important. I make myself important. V'hatoldos hanimshachos mizeh, what comes from a person not considering himself a self-made person and important intrinsically, right, is the same thing that will, the results of that are the opposite results that come from a person who thinks that he is a self-made person and important individually and separate from what the Ribbono Shel Olam made him important. Now he says, anova therefore is not just how you act, but it's what you feel. Because the main foundation is that you feel humble. Okay? A person has to start by feeling humble. And then you can act humble. If you don't really feel humble, the year tzalios ona b'maisa, and you want to act humbly, lo yia elamin ha'anovim ha'medumim v'haroim shizachar l'mala, then you're not going to be a real humble person. You're going to be a hypocrite. You're going to be putting on a show. You're going to be looking like you're humble, but you're really a balgaiva in your heart. And okay, shehein michlal hatzvuyim, these are hypocrites. Asher ein ba'olam rami, there's nothing worse than that. Now I explain this to you. The Chora, this contradicts everything I just told you. And like Rav Aaron said, in contradiction, Mesil Shisharim himself. Because what I told you, not only Sefer HaChinuch says it, Mesil Shisharim says it. You have to first go through the motions. So I would say, you know how you become humble? You act humbly. Act humble, and eventually you'll feel humble.
Mesil Shisharim does say that later.
What?
He says that later.
But he doesn't say here.
Later in the parak, he says that.
But here he doesn't say that. Here, later on, he says something else. But let's see what he says here. What does he say here? He says, "Ki b'tchila tzara shi'yeh ha'adam ame b'machshato." Clearly, you have to start by feeling humble in your mind, because if you don't, and you act humbly, right, it's not going to lead you to be humble. You're a hypocrite, right? That's what he says. Ki lo yeh ame b'daito. If you don't start with the inside, the yirtzalios ame b'maisa, and you're going to act humbly. It's not going to be like we said that motions create emotions. It's going to be that you're a hypocrite. So lechora, this is soser, the whole concept of lechora, how things are, how the chinuch says or whatever. It's all mitzvahs like that. If you have to start with all the inside things, then you'll what's according to the outside things for. Yeah.
There has to be a beginning even before that. Rashi says something about the ma'asot, you follow your ma'asot, but if you don't have an initial sort of start of taking you in that direction, that first choice to go somewhere, then it doesn't matter how many ma'asot you do, it will never get to you.
Okay, seemingly that's what Rav Aaron Kotler says. Okay, but that's not what the Mesillas Yesharim says. I'll leave you to tell you what he says. He says like this: Mikomakom be'inyan redifas hakavod. He says it's part of a whole shiur that he has. He says, running after kavod, shayach ma'isa b'pol b'kama ofanim, v'tzorach li'imona mizeh gamim eno onib mashafta. Right, you can't do negative things, right? And say, well, look, I don't really feel to be humble, so I might as well run after kavod. No. If you run after kavod, you're never going to be humble. So that you have to stop. Even if you don't feel humble, don't do the negative things. However, v'gmara amru da'anava shalo lishma adifa. However, when it comes to acting humble, not acting in a gaivadika way, in other words, running after kavod, that you should stop even if you don't feel humble. Because you'll never feel humble if you're running after COVID. You shouldn't say, well, I don't feel humble, so I might as well run after COVID and do what's really me. That's absurd. Because then you'll never feel humble. But, however, he says, but anova shelo lishma adifa. But if you act anivastik, even if you don't feel it, that's for sure better than not acting anivastik, because like we said, because acting that way will eventually make you that way. So, v'ulai. But the question then is, so what's Mr. Trump say over here? That acting in a humble way is not going to bring you, it's going to be make you a hypocrite. He says, but ulai amasil shishorim ari benoi banova b'maisa lo mitzad shiritzono b'hagia lanova l'kniya. Maybe he's talking, and the reason he said maybe is because it doesn't sound like that. Maybe Mr. Trump is talking about a person who doesn't want to be an onav. He just wants to put on a show. That's wrong already. Then you're a hypocrite. Right? But he doesn't say that to Mr. Shishorim. He says it's impossible. You have to start with the what's it called feeling and be anova, because if you act with anova, it's not going to bring you to anova. That's what he says simply. Rav Aaron Kotler says no, it's talking where you don't want to be an anov, then going through the motions isn't going to help. Then you're a hypocrite. But if you want to be an anov, then that way to get to there is like everybody says. First you act that way, eventually you'll feel like that. But that's not what the Mesillas Yesharim says. That's why Rav Aaron said ulai. Maybe, because the questions, and I think that's the question that he's hinting to. That lechora, everywhere we say that the chitzonius brings to the pnimius. And here the Mesillas Yesharim says it won't work, but another.
The Mesillas Yesharim is not talking about intention. It's sort of left that out. It's just talking about acting. Whereas you made the clear point, it's what your intention is when you act like
that. Yeah, but he doesn't say that. He says if you don't come to begin with to feel an onav inside, then going through the motions is not going to bring you to that. It's just the opposite. Right? And that's not true. That's how do you get to it? By acting as an onav. Yeah.
With the danger of gaiva is so great, and you have to be so careful, that two things are necessary. First of all, you have to start with the intention that you want to be an onav. Right? So at least you're not doing it just for show. But still, it's so easy to fall into it, because it's so addictive to start believing that you're really an onav and getting that. So don't take off more than you can chew. It seems like you have to be just extremely careful with acting as an anav. You have to really question your sincerity and always try to refocus. I'm trying to be an anav here. I'm not kidding myself. Then you're not a hypocrite.
He doesn't say that. He says, "Bitchila tzorah shiyeh ha'adam anav b'machshavta." Not that he has to have kavana, like Rav Aaron says, I want to be an onav someday. You have to be sheyiyeh onav b'machshavta.
Isn't that
should be an onav, not want to be an onav.
Wanting to be an onav is already a step of humility. He's not saying I want to be get kavod. He's saying, I really want to be an anav. I know it's hard. I know it's hard. It's a huge endeavor, but I want to be. That's already a hachna.
Again, it's very nice, and that's all he says. He says, "V'tchila tzarech not sheyirtze ha'adam lios anav, sheyiyeh ha'adam anav b'machshavto." He's explaining now there's two levels of anavus. One is how you feel, and the other one is how you act. And he says the feeling has to come before the action. Right? Not that you want to one day feel like that and then go through the actions. You have to feel like that. You have to actually be an anav in your mind first. And then the actions can come next. But if you don't reach the level of being an anav in your mind, then the actions are not going to bring you to that. It's just the opposite. They're going to make you a hypocrite.
Well, yeah. Is it possible because being an anav is actually not doing things in general? Like when you're a Val Gaiva, you run after Gaiva and you put yourself out there and whatever, you're actually doing actions. Where when you're trying to be an anav, you're not doing those things. So it's a lack of actions. So a lack of actions won't bring you to do things. It won't bring you to feel that. You have to actually feel it for the lack of actions to really mean anything.
Okay, but the only thing is, he's talking about doing things that are representative of anivus, like not wearing nice clothing so you don't show off, and...
But again, that's not doing things. You just said it, not wearing nice clothing. You're not... It's a negative action instead of a positive action. Where when you start to dress sneas because you want to be sneas and
hear,
sneas, you're doing a positive action.
I hear.
So that a positive action will bring you to a positive feeling and mitzvah.
In other words, actions of anivus are refraining from doing things.
Kind of hiding and
even though he gave examples before, but I see that all of them are not doing this, not being insulted when people...
It's
not taking yourself too seriously. I hear. Okay, then maybe that fits in what I'm going to say also.
Well,
like,
maybe anivus is different from all other characteristics.
Why?
For instance, all other characteristics, maybe in the solicitor Sharm would agree that you know you acting will bring it to you. But anivus is like Derech Eretz Kedmat Torah. You've got to have it's like a natural. You can't bring about that by outside actions. Derech Eretz Kedmat Torah is something also. A person has to be a mensch before he can really, you know, be.
Okay. I thought you were going to a different. What you said in the beginning, I hear anivus is different. Why though?
Because it's something inherent in who the person is. You can't cultivate it from the outside.
It's not a feeling or an attitude, like feeling of you taking actions towards so that you will be happy, like we spoke about before, or an attitude of changing. It's a natural.
Okay, let me tell you what I think. I think I'm saying what both of you are saying. I think you're both saying the same thing. Yeah.
You just see from what he says. Two things. First of all, from the end. Says lo ye elamina nava amadumi rabroim she's a partner lamaila, so that's back in Minas Nikias where he's talking about you know the fakers, those who are miskaria of anasno. So he's talking about the opposite of that, and plus the whole thing he's talking about over here is not talking about development. Rabbi keeps saying no, that's what he said. But he never talked about how it develops. He's talking about the definition. Since the definition of anava is that a person is not machshav himself. Therefore, it has to be in the machshava. You're not going to have another just from through action. It's
That's
just
what he says. He says b'tchila. What's tchila? Tchila is development. In the beginning, tzorish yeh adam adav machshavto, va'achar kach yisnai b'darchi anava.
It's talking about development. It's talking about the logical order of how it's defined. You can't have the actions if you don't have the machshava.
He's not talking about how to define it. He's talking about how you get it. Because he says, if you don't go in that order, and you start with, right, ki im lo yeh on the bedaito, the year selasos on the masse, leos on the masse, lo yeh min anothim. He's talking about development. He's not talking about the definitions. It's clear. I mean, he's not talking about how what you start with and what you finish.
I brought two brayos against what the Rav said and
what's
the deal?
What?
Okay. First of all, the Rishon says had developed business does not work that way.
Yeah, okay, fine. That's he said it before that too, but here he says it's not like that.
Okay,
he's contradicting himself.
So I was saying it's not a contradiction. It's not talking about development there.
But you're, the second you're the whole taking context, it out of what he's saying.
The context we're talking about over here is talking about what it is.
Okay. Then he should say it a different way. The way he says it, tchila and achar kach, is talking about order, not definition. Yeah?
A nagar is a feeling. Because if, I remember Rav often saying about Moshe Rabbeinu or other people that, he says, yes, I, or someone who was asked in court, are you the greatest expert on something? He says, yes, I am.
Right.
And that sounds as if it's, it's really not. But it was the truth, because he is, and the feeling is, I am the greatest expert, but I'm only the greatest expert because I could have borrowed four, maybe a bit. So it's that feeling of knowing where I am. If you don't have that feeling, then it doesn't matter how you act outside in terms of whether it looks as if you're behaving like a partner. You still won't be, because you have to have that
feeling. Okay. I think that's the three of you. I'll tell you what I was thinking. And that's the following. Anova is different than everything else. You can act happy and it'll bring you to become happy. Right? In other words, and you'll get that emotion from going through. Anivus is different. Anivus is not acting in a certain way. Right? That's not what Anivus is. Right? It's not the action. The action is only Anivus if it represents how you feel. But if you don't feel like that, then going through the motions is not going through the motions. There's no such thing as going through the motions of anivus. Because a person who maybe doesn't dress flashy is not because he's an onov, it has nothing to do with anivus. That may be a result of anivus, but it's not what anivus is. Dancing is simcha. So you can get happy by dancing. But dressing not nice, or whatever, all the other things that he says over there that are examples of a person acting because he's an anav, is not anivus in itself. It's a result of anivus. It's not an action of. There's no such thing as an action of anivus. Doesn't work, right? Exactly.
Any action of anivus can also be the opposite.
Exactly, because I'm putting on a show, right? So it doesn't make a difference. What? In other words, right? In other words, it's not that with the wrong kavana these things are bad. They're meaningless without the kavana. They don't mean anything. So they're not going to lead you to anything. Dancing is simcha, but dressing not doesn't make you doesn't mean that's anivus. That's an action of it's not an action of anivus. It's only an action of anivus if it comes from anivus. So in anivus it has to be the other way. Anivus is an exception to the rule, because there's no such thing as actions that are intrinsically anivus. There's no such thing. There's actions that are intrinsically simcha. There's no action that's intrinsically anivus. Anivus is described by why you're doing it, not what you're doing. Masha Enkein, simcha can be described what you're doing. Eating, drinking, dancing, that's simcha.
So not answering back when someone insults you isn't necessarily anivus.
Right, maybe because you think you're so great that what can he can't hurt me because I'm too great to even lower myself to speak to. So it's not that the maisim are maisim of anivus without kavana. There's no such thing. There's no mice of anivus unless it stems from a feeling. That's I think that's what you were saying. That's what you were saying. I think that's Batya was saying. So all of it. That's I think what the answer is. Rav Aaron Kotler says differently. He says that in a chanam it could be that going through the motions could be okay, except over here it's talking where you don't want to become an onav. You just want to go through the motions to look like an onav. Then it's taka hypocrisy. But he says it ulai because that's not really what the Mesillas Yesharim says. He doesn't say you have bad kavana or whatever. Or you, he just says it has to be this order. So he understood it also, what you call the same way I understood it, not like you love it. So Rav Aaron Kotler also understood it.
That's, no, it's I said the same thing. It's meduik what he says.
Why?
What?
It's not meduik because Rav Aaron held differently too, and I held differently. So it's not meduik for sure.
I didn't say anything different than what Rav Aaron said.
No, Rav Aaron said that it's talking a special case where you don't want to become an onav, but otherwise it'll work, right?
As opposed to Hanav and Hamadumim.
Right, meaning this is a case where you're going through the motions, but you don't want to get to that emotions. But the Mishnah doesn't say that. He doesn't say that what's it called? He says categorically that you have to start with the lave and then the maisim. Otherwise, if you start with the maisim, it's going to be just meduma. But it's not true. Because you could start with the maisim, as long as you want to get there, it's not going to be meduma. You'll get there. Right? Just like I want to be happy, I'm not a hypocrite. If I dance and I'm not happy, I'll get happy. I want to be happy. But over here, it's talking where the Rav Aaron says, well, you don't want it, then it won't work. But if you do want it, then you can start with the maisim and eventually, just like everything else. The reason he says maybe is because the Mishnah Yisharim doesn't say that. You're adding too much to the Mishnah Yisharim, yeah.
Well, maybe we're not adding enough to the Mishnah Yisharim.
From
what everybody is saying, maybe the fact that he uses the word batchila, he doesn't say kodem, he doesn't say time-wise, the first you have to do this, the first you have to do that. Tchila maybe means the purpose.
Then you should have said to have kavana like that, betchila.
What does tchila mean?
No, betchila means in the beginning.
No, why? Maybe.
Then they should have said beikar, ikar and tofel, not tchila and acharkach, because the next word is acharkach, means after that.
Yeah, but if it was only a matter of time, order, chronologically, should you say first you said kodim this,
I don't know. That's modern Hebrew, but I don't know if in Sushan Tchila and Sof or Ach, he says, what's it called? He says Ach.
Well, yeah, he says Ach.
Yeah, so that's Tchila and Achar is the same thing as Kodim.
Maybe that this is a prerequisite, but not necessarily.
That's what David's saying. It's not in time, in sequence, but in importance. But the Chara is what he says.
Not importance. In definition, what it is. If the Rav takes off the last part of what Rav said about the development, is basically what I said. It's talking about the logic. You can't have a nava if it's without the makshava. It's because those mice are not
right. Okay, so that's what you're saying. The same thing I'm saying. And therefore, if you start with maisim, it's not going to lead you to the machshava.
No, but that's not true. He says, "I'm just said." And the first line of it says, "Right over here." She digs like nimsa tuli but machshava maisim. That anava is totally on machshava and maisim.
Right. So both things. And but machshava has to come first. No.
And maisim, both of them have to come first.
No, he didn't say that.
Yes, he does.
He says it depends on two things, and there's an order of what those two things are. He says you need both things, right? Right? And the first one has to be the machshava, not the maisa. And achar kach is nai bedarche anovim. And only after that is the hanoga. That seems to me very simple to say. So you need both. What's the order? First this, then that, which is the opposite of what he says other things. But you need both, but you need simcha. You need to express the simcha, and you have to have simcha. How do you get to it? First, do the maisim, and you'll get to be the simcha. That's what he says in everything else. Right? Why isn't over here the same thing? You need both. Which one comes first? The maisa. Then you'll get to the machshava. He says the opposite. If you don't have the machshava first, you'll never come to the day. The maisim will never bring you to the machshava. They'll just make you a hypocrite. Okay. I hear you.